Welcome to Cancer Conversations with me, Simon Darby.
And me, Laura Rodich.
This is a podcast series exploring the experiences of young lives against cancer.
Being a young adult in 2018 can really suck, but imagine facing a cancer diagnosis on top of this. Each year, over 2,500 young people are diagnosed with cancer in the UK. The good news is 84% of those young people survive.
Each of our podcasts will bring an honest viewpoint from those young people whose lives have been impacted by cancer. We'll be talking to young people and the people most important to them about treatment and life afterwards. These podcasts will also look at the role Quick Starters and other cancer charities, organisations and the NHS have played on the journey. So let's begin. In today's podcast, you'll hear from Mark about his diagnosis experience, how he found exercise and medicine, and how he's become an assistant coach in our Crick Sergeant CrossFit program. Enjoy.
Welcome, Mark, to podcast today. Thank For you. Everyone that's listening, introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about you.
So, my name's Mark. I was diagnosed with a rare form of cancer whenever I was 24. Yeah, so that's, yeah.
Yeah, what do you do?
I'm an electrician. Okay. I trade and plant loads and loads and loads of hobbies. My main one is probably CrossFit.
Yeah.
With yourself and the Move Forward program.
But you snowboard. And your motorbike.
I've got a bike.
You run.
I have a jet ski as well.
Yeah.
A wakeboard. I try to sometimes. Yeah, just very fit and active, but yeah.
Good, okay. Mm-hmm. So let's go back then for everyone that's listening, and I guess tell me where, I guess, your journey started, or the start of your story.
So the start of my story was back in July of 2017. About a month previous to that, I was working out in Germany. I was out there for a few months, and I came home for a week to go to my friend's wedding, and I started noticing, I was standing in the shower and started noticing that the water was hitting my eyes. I couldn't close my eyelids, and then over a period of probably, it was a couple of days, I started noticing my hands and stuff weren't working the way they should be. I started to become weak. And then speech started to deteriorate as well. So I think I buried my head in the sand a wee bit at the start. And I was like, no, this will pass. It's only, you know, it's nothing. It's not a big deal. And then I went up the NE and progressed. So things got worse.
When you say they got worse, how did they get worse?
I couldn't speak. It sounded like I had a stroke.
Okay.
I couldn't speak. I couldn't swallow either. Couldn't swallow. My legs were working a bit, but they were really shaky. I went from, let's see, there's so much happened, so I'm just trying to, So they discharged me from hospital. They weren't sure what it was. They thought it could have been a thing called Lyme's disease.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I think it's from like, insect bite. They thought I might have got it in Germany. So they gave me antibiotics, and over a period of probably, I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks, things got even worse, to the point where I could barely even move. You could contract your muscles and you could move them a bit, and then it was just nothing. It was just, they weren't putting work. So I ended up, I went back up the NE, and I spent a week in hospital. I was in pretty bad shape. I couldn't swallow. I could see, but it was in double vision. I felt like I never had migraines before, but I had like these massive migraines. And the pressure behind my eyes was just, it felt like my eyes were going to explode. As I say, my hands and stuff weren't really working. My legs were, any time I tried to stand up, my legs were shaking like mad.
And then what did they say it was?
So I went for an MRI. And then I had a lumbar puncture done as well. Anybody who's listened to this that's had a lumbar puncture knows it's not that it's so much sore. It's whenever a lumbar puncture is where they put a needle into your spinal cord.
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor that was doing it told me don't look, and of course I looked and you see the length of this needle. It's about a foot long.
You get into the fetal position.
Yeah, you're lying on your side and
hoping not to fart.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've done that, and then they've done an MRI and stuff on me, but I think they were testing me for motor neurons disease. They thought I might have had motor neurons disease, and then they told me I had a thing called, and I've never heard of this either, folks, but myasthenia gravis. It's a bit of a mouthful. Essentially what it is, in a roundabout way, is it's your immune system. Your immune system is stopping the signals from in your brain from operating properly. So that's what was happening to me. The signal was working a wee bit, so my hands could move a wee bit, and then the signal was just completely cut off. It's almost like a light switch, you know. If you've got a faulty light switch and it's not working, you turn it on, the light works a wee bit, and then the light doesn't.
Yeah.
So I remember laying in the hospital bed, and the neurologist came in to see me. I couldn't speak. As I said, I had double vision. Truthfully, I felt I was helpless. I couldn't.
Because you essentially went from somebody who used their hands as an engineer to somebody who was snowboarding on holiday
very,
all the time,
very active.
To then your body over a very short period of time deciding to essentially not follow your instructions and shut down.
So, So I remember the neurologist coming in and she said to me, like, I couldn't really respond back to her. That they give me speech therapists and stuff, but I couldn't respond back to her, and she told me that I had this and that I would have it for life and that there was no cure for it, but we might be able to manage it through medication, but we're not sure if the medication is going to work or not.
Yeah.
So I remember lying there, I couldn't speak, couldn't communicate with anybody, couldn't move. You just felt completely helpless. Your body had betrayed you. You know that you were just
trapped.
Yeah, it was almost like it wasn't like that locked in. No, these people have been locked in. I could make noise and I could move and I could speak a bit, but you were just completely. I say in that moment, I just felt completely isolated. Completely didn't know where to turn. I couldn't speak. It was just horrifying. And then they started giving me medication. I had to start taking steroids to suppress my immune system. And then they started giving me these other tablets to try to boost the signal in your brain. Thankfully, they worked. The tablets started to work. So over a period, I think I spent about a week and a bit in hospital. The thing they were worried about was that because it affects all of your muscles that you can physically contract, it takes muscles to breathe. So they were fearful that the muscles that I needed to breathe wouldn't work.
Okay.
So that's why they were keeping a very close eye on me. But so the medication worked, and I spent, well, I think it was over a week in hospital, and then they released me. They released me, and then I got a phone call to come back up to the hospital, and they told me that the MRI that they'd done a CT scan on my chest, they'd done an MRI to check my brain, to make sure that there was nothing going on there, and then done a CT scan of the chest, and then this was an error that the other bombshell came, and it says that I've got a tumour beside my heart.
Okay.
It's called a thymoma. It's within your thymus gland. So that all happened in like July, and I think it was the start of October. August. It was the first week in October. I had the operation to remove my thymus gland.
And when they said thymus to you and they were telling you all about that, had they used the word cancerous?
No. But there's a bit of an interesting story around that. Now, I don't know whether this is something that maybe I picked up on whenever I was in the hospital, but the lady who was doing the CT scan, she was very sort of stern and very straight-faced, and whenever she went to put the cannula into my hand to pump the dye, like, we pump this dye around you to see if I said something to her, like, because she missed the vein the first time and she tried it again, and I said something to her like in a joking manner, like, you know, sure, if you don't get it this time, I'll maybe try it on you. And she was just completely like
emotional,
you know, poker face, right? And so after the scan was done, you have to do your breath holds and stuff, and after the scan was done, she came out and started holding my hand and saying, "You're going to be okay, pet." And I was like,
so complete 180 in personality.
Now, I don't know whether this was a coincidence or whether, but alarm bells started ringing in my head, and I thought,
So you think she saw something on your scan and then thought, oh, this guy's got cancer, I'm going to come out and...
Because and then an alarm bell sort of started ringing. She's like, you're going to be okay, Pat. And I was like, yeah, I know. I was like, yeah, I know. What are you talking about? But, so...
And by this stage that you had been told that you had a thymoma, tumor, did you... were you back to like 100% after the myasthenia gravis?
Myasthenia gravis.
Yeah, how did you remember it?
MG, you called MG. Physically?
Yeah.
I was probably, if you put a percentage on it, 85 to 90% was back to where it needed to be. Always very fatigued, but I think your body's sort of working overtime to try to keep you normal.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I was always very fatigued.
And then when you were told about your thymoma, and then you had your surgery, I guess that's sort of when you met me.
Yeah.
And Harry met Sally.
Yeah.
And Lisa as well, Lisa Clancy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you find that?
To be honest, I was in denial. Whenever I first met you, I don't know whether I've come across as being cheeky or not, I don't know. It was like, I knew what you guys were, and I knew what part of the hospital it was in. And, you know, I was like, I don't have cancer, I don't know what you're talking about. You know, you're almost, or I didn't have cancer, what are you talking about? And you were trying to offer me services, you know, that here at Click Start, and this is what we can provide you. And I was in denial, and I didn't want anything to do with it, didn't even want to hear the word, because I think cancer, it carries a big, there's a certain... I feel, personally, there's like a stigma around it, you know, it's an expression, nails that stick out get hammered, you know, and especially within like your friend circle and your social circle, you know, I didn't want to be the talk of everyone's, you know, and people to treat me differently, so I was, you know, my friends were saying to me, oh, where were you, Big Mark? And I was like, I just had to get an operation in my chest there, but no, here I'm brand new, I'm back, you know, I'm the old me.
Yeah.
You know, it's a bit sore and all, but I'll have to...
Because you said you were self-admitted in denial.
Mm-hmm.
Was that like a safety mechanism or protecting yourself?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I think it was. I live in a house with four guys, me and my dad and my two brothers. And it's sort of... And even with my girlfriend and all as well, I think I was trying to protect everyone, but not looking after himself. So he was saying to me, yo, you okay, big man? And I was like, oh yes, dead on, I'm brand new, you know.
Yeah,
I'm fine. But inside I was crumbling massively. I thought I was strong enough to cope with this myself.
Yeah.
And I couldn't speak to anybody. I couldn't speak to my girlfriend because I was trying to protect her.
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell her how I was truly feeling about it all, because I could see she was worried. As it was, same with my dad and same with my brothers, you know, everybody was worried about you, so I was just trying to play it down, if you like.
And do you think whenever you were, pretending or acting or feeling that you were protecting them by acting that you were back at 100% and that everything was fine, that they then started to move on and feel like, well, Mark's grand now, he's telling us he's fine, don't need to worry about him?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that they started, you know, they made the transition that, you know, he's fine, you know, and everything's okay.
And how long did you last then being in denial?
Probably.
Because it requires a hell of a lot of mental energy.
It does,
to keep that up.
Because you're almost living this double life.
Mm.
You are. You're, yeah. And probably, that would happen in October. I met you in... shortly after that, and then I didn't told you I didn't want anything to do with you, and around about, maybe not quite them words,
but, I think those words repeat.
I would say whenever you introduced me to the Move Forward program, I realised that I was in, maybe not trouble's not the word, but I realised that I needed help.
Yeah, because I suppose for me it was a case of the things that we were offering you, that you know, I don't need to see clients and don't need to, you know, any support in regards to this, finances or anything else like that. But what we knew was that you had previously done exercise before. Mm-hmm. It was a big thing for you. And for anyone that's not listening, we run an exercise program in Northern Ireland called Move Forward. It's a CrossFit program. So I felt that that was a way of getting you a last-ditch attempt of saying, here's something that would benefit you. Because at Move Forward, we don't talk about cancer. You're there with the sole purpose of getting fit and healthy.
Yeah.
And you took a risk and took a chance.
But I was almost comfortable isolating myself.
Mm.
It sounds strange, but you know, I was it was just me, my girlfriend, and I was just trying to like forget about all the bad stuff, forget about everybody, isolate myself from my friends, isolate myself from everyone. You know, I don't, you know, I'm having a tough enough time as it is here. I'm trying to cope with this, so if I try to forget about it, maybe it didn't happen.
Yeah.
You know, do you know what I mean? But that wasn't the case. And then whenever you told me about the Move Forward program, I'd done a wee bit of CrossFit before, like maybe a month, but I never really stuck at it. And then whenever you told me about the Move Forward CrossFit program, I had this idea of, because I'd never met anybody else who was sick.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So I had this idea of turning up and everybody would look sick and have, you know, chemo bags and pick lines and, you know, all that sort of stuff. But that wasn't the case. Everyone was just, I don't like to use this word normal, but everyone was
normal looking.
Yeah, everyone was the same as me.
Yeah.
Do you know what? And it's strictly, I'm not exaggerating this. I'm not just saying this because you're sitting here, but it has honestly changed my life in a positive way. I think it's given me a sense of direction that I needed. It's given me,
So had we not been running that group, what would life look like now?
Probably not very, probably, I don't know, not great.
No.
Truthfully, if I'm being completely transparent and being open, probably not great.
Okay. And then you took a risk, you came to the Move Forward program, and to say that you excelled very quickly was an understatement, because it was, I had to reel you back in sometimes, because you, I think because you'd spent so long not having control of your body, that when you got it back, you wanted to make the most of every opportunity.
Yeah.
And CrossFit's one of those ones where we challenge you with your coordination, your flexibility, and your balance and stuff. And this was you getting your body back to being 100% when it was sitting at 80% at the time it came.
Yeah.
Was that important to do that, to feel more in control?
I think becoming, whenever you lose everything, I don't mean that, I mean that in the sense of you lose power of your body, you know, you lose, it almost like it ignited a fire within me where, I hope this doesn't sound cheesy, but, you know, I just wanted to, I think becoming physically strong has helped me psychologically.
Yeah.
In a big way, it's like, and there's so many, there's so much, I could talk about this for hours, like it's...
Because you are quite passionate about kind of mental health.
And, yeah, massively.
And saying that it's okay when you're not okay.
Yeah, it's okay not to be okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's, you know, I don't know if I, can I give advice on this?
Yeah, it's your words.
So, my advice would be that anybody out there who is maybe relating to some of the stuff I'm saying, or you're maybe going through, you know, you've just been diagnosed, that be real to yourself, and it's okay not to be okay, you know, and open up and be honest with the people who you care about and people who you love, because doing it the way I did, by burying my head in the sand, it's just the road to no time.
Mm.
And I don't know, since my diagnosis, I've struggled quite a lot psychologically, and I think I use CrossFit as my medicine. It helps me. See, if you've had a bad day, or if you're having a tough time, or you're spending too much time thinking within yourself, and you're overthinking, I use it, and everybody else, well, I don't want to speak on behalf of everybody else, but the vibe I get from the majority of people there is that, you know, you come to the Move Forward program, cancer's not the focus. You can speak about it if you want to. The focus is becoming a stronger and better individual, a better person, you know. And I think through group exercise, and especially the program that you started, that it's I think you've changed so many lives. truthfully.
I could name names.
Do
you feel that in doing that and being around other people, like-minded people, mm-hmm. who the focus was around kind of getting fit and healthy, that encouraged you to mm-hmm. access the services to help with your mental health at
mm-hmm.
that time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because you've almost got everyone has different ways of processing things, and for me, I was very much burying my head in the sand. But whenever you're surrounded with people, like-minded people, who are also struggling, I could see sometimes that, now maybe I'm reading, this is just the way I personally see it, but when you see everyone pushing within the CrossFit gym, and they're really, really, really pushing, it's almost as if it's a way of getting rid of some of the bad stuff that's happened to you.
Yeah.
That's my perception of it. And that's what I do, I think. You know, you use it to get rid of some of the bad stuff, and in turn, you know, because it is so difficult, it makes it so rewarding.
Yeah.
And you've also got that sense of community there, where everyone helps each other. It's not like whenever you go to like a standard confessional gym where
you're by yourself.
By yourself, and it's all very isolated. You know, if we have all finished the workout, I'll just explain it. So we have all finished the workout, and Simon's got 10 more press ups to do, and Simon feels that I cannot do another 10 press ups. There's no way it can't be done. Everyone will rally around you, and everybody will help push you and cheer you on. And there's like a sense of camaraderie. Everyone is just there for each other, and sometimes you don't even need to speak. It's not like, you know, even talking about it, it's just everyone's got your back because everybody knows that how you're feeling.
Yeah, and that's. I suppose that was one of the core reasons why I started a CrossFit program mm-hmm. was because the sense of community and these old, what we would say would be the core kind of beliefs or values around CrossFit is around you're not done until the last person's done mm-hmm. and you don't put your weights or anything away mm-hmm. until that last person's finished.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you leave your ego at the door, mm-hmm. so if you're coming in thinking that you're better than anybody else,
mm-hmm.
it doesn't matter about anybody else because you're there to beat your previous record or to fight your own internal mental demons during mm-hmm. that workout
mm-hmm.
so that at the end of it you feel that you've left doing yourself justice, not that you're then.
And
I think that's over the last 2 years of running it is that I've seen that where some people have really struggled with the idea that everyone's standing around them cheering them on, and now mm-hmm. that's some of the things that has pushed them is that either they A, want to get away from that so they work harder to finish sooner, or B, that they're no longer afraid of it because they know that the intention behind it is other people are there mm-hmm. that have struggled together in that workout, but everyone wants them to still push and still give 100% mm-hmm. right through the end. But then you took the CrossFit program one step forward.
I did, and there's a reason for that. I noticed that, truthfully, I'm not saying this because you're sitting there, you inspired me to want to try to help people. So I feel like I've made that transition across, you know, it's from a point where I felt very vulnerable to now I feel like I've got the strength,
mm-hmm.
and the strength has come from CrossFit and your program. So you inspired me to want to try to help people. And I don't want to mention names, but there was a guy who we did CrossFit with, and I remember saying to him one day, you know, he was doubting himself, and I said, listen, I'm on top of the shoulder, and I said, don't know something, I believe in you. And it was almost as if you gave him £100.
Yeah.
You know, it was...
I think you gave him £100,000. But
it's like... And then in a roundabout way, I'm not trying to change the world, you know, but I find that by helping people is in a roundabout way helping me. I hope that doesn't sound come across as being
narcissistic. At the end of the day, that's why people volunteer, and that's why people do their job is because mm-hmm. and it's not a selfish thing, but we do things for other people to help ourselves and help them.
It was that's what I mean. I think it makes me help. It's helping me. On my road to recovery too, you know, it's
giving you that opportunity as well to help others who mm-hmm. were in either the same situation or an element of the same situation mm-hmm. as yourself, because with the thymoma you didn't have cancer radiotherapy mm-hmm. but that mm-hmm. doesn't mean that you can't relate to every other part of the mm-hmm. journey that came before.
I think some of the psychological things are it's still the same.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether you had a brain tumour,
yeah,
whether you had testicular cancer, whether you had, you know, femoral lung cancer, it doesn't matter what you have, because I think, you know, sometimes the psychological, you know, you have cancer, imagine somebody, you have cancer, it's like somebody, the way I described it was, whenever my surgeon told me, although I had a bit of a rough idea from what the lady who done my CT scan, hearing it out loud was different. It was almost like somebody throwing a grenade into the room. You know that, like, ding.
Yeah.
It was honestly like that ringing noise. I don't have a, I cannot tell you a word he, I just heard the word cancer, I couldn't tell you another word that he said.
Yeah.
Because it was, so a lot of the, yeah. I hope not going off track here too much.
No.
I'm jumping back between.
Yeah, but I suppose then you went off and.
So I decided, yes, I know where we were. So I decided. Sorry for cutting you off.
You're okay.
So I decided that. So you inspired me and I wanted to try to help people. So I decided I was going to do my CrossFit Level 1 certificate to become a CrossFit Level 1 trainer.
Yeah, good. Yeah. Right, you got that point in your exam.
Yeah. So I went and done that down in Dublin about 3 months ago. And
it's not an easy course.
It's not easy. It really is not. There's a lot of science behind, you know, how it all works. And
we are both similar in the sense that we don't come from a sporting background. We were both going into it very, very new. So I did my level one probably about 3 years ago in order to start the program. So as people kind of say to you, whatever it's taught on those 2 days, that's essentially what you need to learn and remember, because I think some people who have a sporting background will go into taking some of that knowledge in, and sometimes that can hinder them when it comes to the exam at the end. But
it was difficult. I walked out of the, I think everybody walked out of the exam thinking, oh, we failed it, you know. But and then 4 or 5 days later I got an email saying, congratulations, you've passed. And it was like somebody gave me £1 million, you know. But
because that is a new route for you to take your life and to take even your career, but also then to take to help me take this program forward.
Well, that's why I want to do it, because I want to try to elevate the program, and I think there needs, truthfully, I think there needs to be more. We need to try to raise more awareness in this and trying to push it more, because there's 30 people here in Northern Ireland that will tell you, in a roundabout way, maybe in different words, the same thing as what I'm telling you now. You know, it does work. You know, we won an award last year.
Yeah, we did excellence in rehabilitation.
Yeah.
You
don't win, you know.
You don't win those by just doing press ups.
No.
Yeah.
So it does work, you know, and you've got a lot of science behind it too. You know, the physical, like fatigue, how to improve fatigue, how to improve.
Yeah, quality of life. Quite a different physical exercise measures of fitness, essentially. But I think one of the things that I necessarily underestimated, which you touched on a lot in this podcast, was around the idea of how it helps you cope mentally. And the word that I would use would be kind of resilience building, because a big part of CrossFit is that we record our workouts at the end of every class, so you know that if we go to repeat that again, you can look back and see how much faster, how much heavier you went. And a part of that is your performances or your exercises are observable, they're measurable over time, but they reinforce that you're improving. And that's how we build resilience sometimes, and that translates into real life with people feeling that they can cope better because they've done that workout again. And over time then they're seeing improvements in their fitness, in their body shape, which is never necessarily the goal, but it just sometimes naturally comes.
I like the mind map quite a lot, you know, say things out loud and try to work stuff out so it makes sense in a different way. But I think if you were to put a move forward program for anybody listening into like medical terms, I don't know if I can do this right. How it actually works. So if you imagine that the So if you imagine that you have an infection, right? Infection within your body, and you've got a really high temperature, and you imagine, for me anyway, you imagine that your high temperature is all the psychological stuff that goes on surrounding your cancer diagnosis.
Like the worries and anxiety.
The worries and anxieties and everything. And then if you imagine the infection as being the
you mean that CrossFit being the antibiotics that you would give?
So I think CrossFit is like the antibiotics, and then the peer support aspect of things is whenever you go to CrossFit, even though people don't talk about it, just knowing that you have a community there is like the IV paracetamol, so it helps bring down your temperature, and then the CrossFit's working away in the background as the antibiotics to help heal you.
I like that analogy.
It took me quite a while to try to work it out, but if somebody who's listening to this, just to try to whenever we play this back, this might sound what's he talking about?
So there's all these people listening to this struggling to understand it.
At least we've got the whiteboard up and on. It's like trigonometry.
Yeah, but I think we can't undervalue the role of exercise that it plays, not just in life after cancer treatment, but during cancer itself. But I suppose if we're thinking about life afterwards, what exercise brings is a ability to bring back a routine into your life, get some happy hormones floating around your body again, blood pumping, oxygen, gets you those muscles that would have been maybe just not used as much during treatment or have deteriorated over time, gets them back to functioning again, moving your back, shoulders, hips, knees, everything that has maybe been quite tight because you were lying in a hospital bed for so long, or just sitting on the sofa in bed watching Netflix. And all of these sort of things are just ticking wee boxes to say you're moving forward. Hence why we call our program before. Because I think we're only getting to the start of what's going to be the revolution of cancer survivorship, and that's exercise, physical activity. And there are other people out there. Move Forward is not the only program that exists. There are some other ones. We're unique in the sense that we're looking at CrossFit, and it is equally as arguable as any other yoga scheme, personal trainer scheme, swim, anything else out there. It's just one way of exercising in life after cancer. It's not the best, but I'm biased, so I'm going to say
it is the best. It is the best.
And what we're going to focus on the next couple of weeks is actually co-production. So we're going to program the 10 weeks together. Because you have expertise, you have knowledge now, not just in having done your level 1 certificate, but also in having done all these exercises over the last wee while. And we can then look at how we modify and scale all of those so that anybody with any ability, with any disability or impairment or age can still do CrossFit. Regardless.
Yeah.
So now what's next for Mark?
What's next for me? The CrossFit Games.
Okay, let's be realistic. No, obviously not. Yeah. But what's next for you?
Ideally, I would like to be, I'd like to move into CrossFit.
Coaching?
Coaching, definitely. Yeah. Coaching in the same environment that we're in, you know, with Move Forward and with everyone, just moving. Ideally, if I can have a career, I would like my career to be doing that.
Yeah.
Because I would like to try to help people, because I think I'm emotionally invested in it. I know it works, and you know, it's not even being bad. It does work.
Yeah.
You know, and there's 30 other people here in Northern Ireland that'll tell you the same thing, maybe in different words, but
yeah,
that it works. So ideally, coaching full time, then Move Forward.
Yeah. And I suppose if we're kind of to sum up everything from like the very beginning when you were talking about your experience, it was that even if you are in denial about the fact that maybe you've got cancer, that sometimes just taking a chance on something different and giving it a go once allows you to step outside of that comfort zone.
I heard this quote once, and it probably seems a bit cheesy, but life begins at the end of your comfort zone. And see, if I hadn't pushed myself out of my comfort zone, I wouldn't be sitting where I am today. I wouldn't be as physically strong, I wouldn't be as psychologically strong, I wouldn't be, I would probably still be burying my head in the sand and avoidance, just trying to avoid everything, which, and it turns into a big vicious circle, because you know, it just gets worse.
Yeah.
So it's time to face it head on, but I don't think I would have had the strength psychologically to tackle a lot of these issues without the help of yourself. Everybody had moved forward and moved forward.
Yeah.
Truthfully.
Good. Well, good luck with the rest of it. Yeah. And this won't be the last that people will hear of Move Forward if you and I have anything to do with it. So, well, thank you very much for sharing your story. A huge thanks to Mark for telling a story and being honest about his denial about having cancer. But in a weird way, I'm glad that we had our Move Forward program to offer him at the time, because as he said, he doesn't know where he would be if he hadn't have joined and taken that chance. This podcast has brought up any thoughts, feelings or questions for you, or you want to know more, then get in touch with Click Sergeant, either your social worker, community worker or TYA nurse. We're here to help.